The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it, we can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Namo tassa bhavagato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Homage to the Blessed One, the Arhant, the Fully Enlightened One. So this is our last talk for the week. In the Dharma teachings to the people of the Bamboo Gate, the Buddha gave us a pretty clear list, enumeration of the areas in which we can reflect on treating others like we would like to be treated ourselves. And although that's a very simple teaching in a way, it's actually very profound. And in these ways of treating others like we'd like to be treated, speech was considered. Okay, and as you know, right speech is a spoke of the Eightfold Path as well as a precept. It's also one of the four wisdoms. Speech can be a good tool for harmony, spreading information, knowledge, and even relaxation and entertainment. It can also be hurtful and harmful. Once out, it's hard to take back. River Master Jiu used to say, speech is a tricky area, and yet it is what we have to communicate with as human beings. So we should make the best use of it. So as Buddhist monks, our practice is not one of utter silence. In fact, the Buddha forbade whole communities of monks from taking a vow of silence, as he felt that that would be an obstacle for developing right speech and would be an obstacle for the governance of the Sangha. Ultimately, not speaking at all doesn't solve our problems with communication. So what the Buddha taught about was proper or well-spoken speech. And this is the sutta that we're going to consider today. It's found both in the Suttinipata and also in the Samyutta Nikaya. And it's called proper or well-spoken speech, or sometimes the Suhasita Sutta. I'm sure that's incorrect pronunciation, but okay. And so in this sutta, the Buddha's giving a talk to his monks. They're in Jetta Grove, and he talks about the four factors of well-spoken or proper speech. And in fact, he actually gave lots of teaching, if you go through the Pali Canon, about proper speech and the proper time to speak and all kinds of things. So in the sutta, the Buddha says, when speech possesses four factors, it will be well-spoken, not badly spoken, and it is blameless and irreproachable by the wise. What for? Here, a bhikkhu, and I think, please, this is for everybody. I don't think it's just for bhikkhus, because speech is something we all do. And so here, a bhikkhu speaks only what is well-spoken, not what is badly spoken. They speak only dhamma, not non-dhamma. They speak only what is pleasing, not what is displeasing. They speak only what is true, not lies. And then one of the monks who is in the audience of the Buddha here is at Jetta Grove with the Buddha, Venerable, I think it's Vengisha, arises and he says he'd like to recite a verse about these four factors. So here's his verse. One should utter only such speech by which one does not torment oneself or cause injury to others. That speech is truly well-spoken. So, you know, a little bit of self-deprecating humor about ourselves. I think it's good to laugh at ourselves because we're funny in many ways. but, you know, we just don't want to be down on ourselves or, you know, negative about ourselves. It just serves no purpose. Number two of these items he wanted to speak. One should utter only pleasant speech, speech that is gladly welcomed. One should speak words that bring nothing, bad. Okay. One should speak words that bring nothing bad, speech that is pleasing to others. Truth is indeed deathless speech. This is an ancient principle. The good and the Dhamma, good people say, are established upon truth. So there's a footnote here, and when he's talking about the deathless, he's talking about Nibbana or Nirvana. Okay. He continues, speech that the Buddha utters for the attainment of Nibbana, the secure, for making an end to suffering, is indeed supreme speech. So I'd like to elaborate a little bit on well-spoken or proper speech, because I think it's not a simple area of training. In the Buddha's explanation of right speech in the Eightfold Path, he says, and what is right speech? Abstinence from false speech, abstinence from malicious speech, abstinence from harsh speech, abstinence from idle chatter. This is right speech. And then in the numerical discourses, he taught about speech possessing five factors for it to be well spoken. It is spoken at the proper time. What is said is true. It is spoken gently. What is said is beneficial. It is spoken with a mind of loving kindness. And those are themes that we hear over and over again. Okay. There's an old adage, as we all know, if you don't have something nice to say, say nothing at all. Maybe some of the time it's easier said than done. No pun on the word said here. But to remain silent is difficult for us sometimes. If you're a responsible human being, which I'm sure we all are, if you are a parent, a teacher, an employer, a senior employee, a coworker, a lawyer, a politician, a high-tech, or what do we call this tech nowadays, worker, a carpenter, a cook, you know, you can just go on and on and on. Right speech is for everyone. Okay, we all come across situations daily that give us chances to develop and carry out proper speech. Here's a few things that I find helpful. Meditate in the conversation. Okay, this is meditation in action. We're off the cushion. We're in everyday life. But meditate when you're having a conversation with somebody else. Meditate while you're listening, and meditate while you're speaking. Listen to the other person. Let them talk. You know, we're famous as human beings of cutting people off. Let people talk and listen to what they have to say. And as I said, when you're speaking, at least I try to do this myself, when I'm speaking myself, I try to hear what I'm saying as opposed to just shooting it out there. Because sometimes it's skillful and sometimes it's not unskillful. It's unskillful. And, you know, I need to look at it. Sometimes we can get unnecessarily worked up about an issue. This is especially if the issue is near and dear to us, or if we feel we have been unjustly treated. And we may have been, you know, but it's just kind of getting emotionally worked up. Defensive speech can quickly move away from what we really intended to say. So when we're driven by emotion, by reaction, we can find things leaping out of our mouth that we would prefer to keep in. And as I said, once said, it's kind of hard to bring it back in there. Of course we can apologize. We can try again. But if we meditate, you know, and we try to be still in this place, oftentimes we can avoid stepping into it. If we're really upset by something, maybe it's a good time to cool down. Take a break. Wait a bit before we speak. Gentleness and compassion are key words in regard to speech. So I know you all are familiar with the Shishogi and Great Master Dogen's teaching there, but I think it's just really incredible. So he says, behold all beings with the eye of compassion, to behold all beings with the eye of compassion and to speak kindly to them is the meaning of tenderness. If one would understand tenderness, one must speak to others while thinking that one loves all beings all living things as if they were one's own children. By praising those who exhibit virtue and feeling sorry for those who do not, our enemies become our friends, and they who are our friends have their friendship strengthened. This is all through the power of tenderness. Whenever one speaks kindly to another, his face brightens and his heart is warmed. If a kind word be spoken in his absence, the impression will be a deep one. Tenderness can have a revolutionary impact upon the mind of man. Okay, it has a revolutionary impact on us all and on our minds. And okay, when in this well-spoken sutta that I stated those 4 points from, it says, speak only the Dhamma. Okay? Does this mean we go around giving Dharma talks to all our non-Buddhist friends, telling them the wonders of the Dharma? This is generally a real put-off to people, you know? And if you do it a number of times, when they see you, they're going to go running. They don't want to have the conversation. Okay? It's better just to be ordinary. Dharma actually includes the most seemingly mundane of things and events. We don't have to be talking deep Dharma to be speaking about the Dharma. I'd like to read a quote from a new book, which is a biography of Anjan Cha. The book's called Stillness Flowing, The Life and Teachings of Anjan Cha. And the author is Anjan Jayasaro. Okay, so the quote is, Lang Por, and that's actually an honorific for Anjan Cha. Lang Por, Anjan Cha, was famed for his ability to teach the most profound matters in simple terms that his listeners, whatever their background, could understand. He was adept at tailoring his manner and vocabulary to the needs of his audience. Many people who had grown up with the idea of the Dhamma was too profound for an ordinary They'd grown up with the idea that the Dhamma was too profound for an ordinary person to grasp. Well, these people found listening to Anjan Cha an exhilarating experience because his approach was very simple, often. A common reaction was that he brought the teachings alive for them for the first time. On one occasion, a visitor who had seen a number of Western monks in the monastery asked Anjan Cha how many languages he could speak, because he was always talking to people, you know, villagers, officials, construction workers, farmers. He's always, and also Easterners and Westerners. So Anjan Cha replies, "Oh, lots," in terms of the amount of languages he speaks. "I can speak the language of villagers, the language of merchants, the language of soldiers. I know so many languages." Okay. So isn't this the way the Buddha gives his teaching in the Pali Canon? You know, it's just so many just straightforward teachings. Yes, there's some incredibly deep teachings in the Pali Canon, but there's so many straightforward teachings. And, you know, that's what I'm drawn to. And this is what I saw in Reverend Master Jiyu. I met her in college, in a religious studies class at a Jesuit university. It was 69 or 70 when I first met her. But I was just amazed. This person, who was obviously very smart, knew a lot about Buddhism, had experience, just was ordinary. You know, she was kind, she was compassionate, infinitely patient with us young people. She was willing to try again and again to answer our questions if we didn't understand. So being ordinary is quite a good way for us to be. Training should make us closer to the human race. It should break down our separateness. Okay, so I'd like to conclude this talk today, although this is going to take a little bit, with 3 more stories from the Pali Canon, because they're just really interesting. So there's a story in the Middle Link Sayings of the Buddha. It's entitled "The Dog Duty Ascetic." Okay. And I'm going to give you the short version of all these. Okay? Because if you'd like, you can go back and read them. So there's these two ascetics who come upon the Buddha. One's an ox-duty ascetic, Puna, and the other's a naked dog-duty ascetic, Senaya. Okay? And, of course, you know, this would not be something out of the ordinary in India, I don't think even to this day, nor would it have been something that was, you know, like something that the Buddha hadn't seen. He did the ascetic thing, okay? He knew quite a bit about it. So the ox ascetic's a little on the arrogant side, you know, and the dog ascetic is much more humble. It kind of reminds me of the difference between cats and dogs. Sorry, I'm just kidding here. I'm a dog person, but it's kind of like that maybe. So the dog ascetic greets the Buddha with courtesy. I think he circles around him, and then he sits down at the side of the Buddha, curled up like a dog. And the ox duty ascetic remains standing. He's cordial to the Buddha, but what he tries to do over the next bit is he tries to press the Buddha for an answer about the naked dog ascetic. He says, this naked dog duty ascetic, who does what is hard to do, he eats his food when it is thrown to the ground. He has long taken up and practiced that dog duty. What will be his destination? What will be his future course? Okay. So he, over and over again, this ox duty ascetic is pressing the Buddha with this, not about his own destiny, but about the destiny of this dog duty ascetic. And the Buddha doesn't want to answer. Yeah, he knows that this dog duty ascetic is very sincere. He doesn't want to hurt his feelings, you know. He knows also that his practice is a little bit misplaced. So finally, you know, after the ox duty ascetic has pushed the question over and over again, the Buddha gives an answer. He says, someone develops the dog duty fully and uninterruptedly. He develops the dog habit fully and uninterruptedly. He develops the dog mind and dog behavior fully and uninterruptedly. Having done so on the dissolution of the body after death, he reappears in the company of dogs. Well, that's not bad, not totally bad. But if he has such a view as this, by this virtue or observance or asceticism or holy life, I shall become a great god or some lesser god. That is wrong view in this case. Now there are two destinations for one with wrong view, hell or the animal realm. Okay. So when the Buddha says this, the naked dog ascetic starts crying, and he's bursting into tears. And I'm sure the Buddha felt a little sad about this, because he didn't want this, you know. He didn't want to upset the dog duty ascetic. But the dog duty ascetic responds to the Buddha. He says, I'm not crying because the Blessed One has said this about me, but because I have long taken up and practiced this dog duty. You know, he put a good portion of his life into it. Okay. Then I think the dog duty ascetic turns around and asks about the ox duty ascetic. And basically, the Buddha gives the same answer, except it's the ox world that he could end up in. And after the Buddha has talked about these things, first the ox ascetic asks to be a lay disciple of the Buddha. This happens. And then the dog duty ascetic asks to be a monk. And the Buddha responds to him that if someone formerly belonged to another sect, there's a 4-month probation period before they're accepted into the monastic sangha, or maybe not. Okay? And this doesn't deter the dog duty ascetic. He replies, I don't care if it takes 4 years. This is what I want to do. So what the Buddha also said is he has some discretion in this, how long this period needs to take. Well, the Buddha ends up ordaining him right away. And it's said that the dog duty ascetic, you know, in a short period of time, had a very deep realization of the Dharma. Okay, next story. I didn't actually find this in the Pali Canon. I just couldn't narrow it down in there, but I think it's there somewhere. I found it in Naratara's book, The Buddha and His Teachings, and that's largely quotations from the Pali Canon. Okay, so the Buddha found himself in this awkward situation. He and some of his monks had been invited to a meal at a Brahmin's house, and when they were invited, they went. Okay, so they go for the meal, and the Brahmin, instead of being cordial and entertaining the Buddha, proceeds to pour forth a torrent of abuse, apparently choosing the coarsest of words to do this. Well, he'd seen this before, in a sense, but this guy was pretty out there. So the Buddha poses this question to this person when he's quieted down. He says, "I'm sure." Oh, this is it. Okay. So when the Brahmin quiets down, the Buddha politely inquires. He says to the Brahmin, he says, "Do visitors come to your house, good Brahmin?" And the Brahmin says, "Yes." And then the Buddha says, "What do you do when they come?" Well, the Brahmin says, "I prepare a sumptuous feast." Well, then the Buddha replies, "If they fail to turn up, please." So if the Brahmin has made this feast and the guests fail to come, "Why, we gladly partake of it," the Brahmin says. So then the Buddha concludes with, "Well, good Brahmin, you have invited me for alms and entertained me with abuse. I accept nothing. Please take it back." And I think he walks out. I don't think this one got, you know, resolved in terms of any apologies from the Brahmin. So sometimes we have to be straightforward with a little oomph or emphasis in our speech, you know, being in positions or something's gone wrong. You know, sometimes we have to be straightforward and firm. Sometimes we have to tell someone something that they don't like to hear, or that they need to hear, or is difficult for us to say. You know, it's said that friends sometimes have to tell friends what is difficult. Not all the time, gosh sakes, but occasionally. You know, a friend can really help a friend by pointing out to them something that's occurring. If we can keep in mind the other person's Buddha nature and have the intention, have their best intention in mind, we can be gentle, compassionate, and kind in our speech, even if it's very straightforward and firm. And of course, this could only be a help in a difficult situation. I've told this story a number of times, but it was a life changer for me. So I was a young boy graduating from grammar school to high school, and I'd had this sports coach who coached just about all the teams I played on from the fourth grade through the eighth grade, and all the different sports I played he coached. So one day, towards the end of my eighth grade year, before I went into high school, we had practice, and after practice he said, "Oh, I'll give you a ride home today." You know, he did this occasionally, but not very often. And so he drove me home, and he stopped right in front of my house, and then he says, "I have something to say to you." And then he kind of laid it out for me. You know, he said, "You know, you're kind of immature. You're going into high school." He said, "This is not the way to be as an athlete. It's not the way to be as a person," he said. And he said, "The difficulty you're going to find in high school if you continue this way is that people are just going to pass you up." He said, the pool gets smaller as you go up the ladder. The pool gets smaller. Well, needless to say, you know, I was really upset with him for a couple of weeks. You know, how dare he tell me that I'm immature? How dare he give me this advice? And then one day I realized he's right. This was really good advice. Okay, and you know, I think I sort of took it. You know, obviously I had a lot further to go with it. But it changed my life. You know, I really, it allowed me to look at myself and change my attitudes. Okay, so since this is the last talk, I hope you bear with me with one last story about the Buddha's lifetime. So it was the time for reading the Paṭimokkha, the monastic precepts for the monks. In the Theravada tradition, they do it just with the monastic community. I think that was what was done by the Buddha back then. And they'd gather in the evening and meditate for a while, and then the Buddha would recite the rules of discipline. Well, time passed, and you know, kind of meditation went on and on, and it was getting dark, and then it got darker. The evening wore on. Ananda went up to the Buddha, and he tried to say to him, "Well, you know, it's time to recite the monk's discipline." Okay? And the Buddha just sat there. Okay, and a little while later, Ananda tried again. And then a little while later, Ananda tried again, and I think it went into midnight or so. If I remember correctly, the Buddha finally responded to Ananda that he said, there's someone who's violated lots of the monastic code in the audience. You know, they've had opportunities to confess this, to work it out. We've given them all kinds of chances, and they're still doing it. And what's worse, is they're not owning up to it. So Mahamoggallana looks out across the assembly, and he realizes who it is. And he goes up to that person, and he says, "Please confess what you have done. Tell us what you have done. You know, I'm sure that." That's why the Buddha just sat still all that time. He was just hoping this person would own up to what he had done. But he didn't. And when Mahamoggallana attempted it, he didn't also. He just wouldn't talk. So Mahamoggallana grabs him by the arm and escorts him out of the assembly, out of the monastery, out the gate, and he locks the gate. And he said, the Buddha said, immoral of bad conduct, impure of suspect behavior, secretive in his actions, not an ascetic through claiming to be one, not a celibate though claiming to be one. So it goes on. This person, you know, just had difficulties and they wouldn't admit it, and they were just continuing to do it. So sometimes we run across situations in life in which we have to apply a tough action. Sometimes we have to say no and show someone the door. And fortunately, these occurrences are very rare. And they may not even occur in your life, and that would be wonderful. They're definitely not pleasant, okay? And if we're going to do something like this, we should consider what we're doing very deeply and meditate before we speak or act. And if we do them without anger, hate, or violence, that's the best way. But sometimes we have to do these tough actions. Okay? The Buddha's life was not an easy one, as you can see from these different things that I talked about. And the Buddha was not a soft pushover. I saw the same thing in Reverend Master Ji, you know, she's an incredibly compassionate person, but there was the occasional time when things had gone too far and she had to do something. So the Buddha did what he needed to do and he accepted the consequences. And Reverend Master Ji used to say over and over again that Buddhism is for spiritual adults. As we know, life is not always comfortable and easy. And throughout the Pali Canon, we find excellent teaching and advice on how to live in ways that benefit ourselves and others. I don't know about you, I really find this helpful, you know, to have all these teachings. The Buddha was kind, skillful, compassionate, generous, and wise. And he said that if we want to be the same way, we just have to put effort in. Okay? We too can find a cessation from suffering, actually in this very life. I hope by offering you this small sample of how and what the Buddha taught, you will look further into the immense teachings in the Pali Canon, and the Dharma is good in the beginning, good in the middle, good in the end. It will carry us far. Homage to all the Buddhas in all worlds. Homage to all the Bodhisattvas in all worlds. Homage to the scripture of great wisdom.